Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Georgetown McDonough's MBA program. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and today I'm joined by Alex Brown, my colleague here at Clear Admit. Alex, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me on the show again, and looking forward to our conversation today about applying in round two if you applied in round one.
Yeah, this is sort of a very specific topic, but I think it actually applies to a ton of our audience in the sense that, you know, really anyone who's applied in round one, the question is, are you round one and done, or are you going to go for additional schools or a kind of retooling of your strategy in round two? And we've kind of, Alex and I have talked about this as we thought about today's podcast, and we really wanted to kind of present you guys with a number of scenarios that exist. And so the first one we're going to talk about is probably the least fun for some of you, but we're going to call it the crash and burn round one scenario. So Alex, do you want to just talk about that scenario a little bit and let our listeners know that there's still hope?
Sure. As we know, leading up to the holidays, many of the round one decisions are coming out thick and fast. And for some candidates, the news is unfortunately not good. And this is almost a function of oftentimes candidates apply to the sort of same level or the same caliber of MBA program. So the reality is if one school decides not to admit you, even though you've got an interview invite or something like that, then other similar schools are potentially quite likely to come to similar decisions if they're using a similar type of admissions process. So there will be candidates that unfortunately, might have applied to 3, 4, or 5 schools and have no options at this point. Or maybe some of them are on the wait list, but in any event, no positive outcome at this point.
Right. Yeah, and I think it's important to just note that I always found in my history of kind of working in admissions and then working with candidates as they apply to business school that a lot of people have a round one approach, which is kind of like, top school or bust. So they do apply to those 3, 4, or 5 very top schools. And their opinion at that stage of the process is, well, I'm not going if I don't get into one of these. But then when they get the news that they haven't made the cut, sometimes there's a rethinking that happens. And I feel like they start to think, well, I guess I would go to this school that's maybe number 10, on the list or something if I could get in there. And so they start to, the reality of not going off to school the next year starts to kind of sink in, and they maybe have a different point of view on adding applications.
Yeah, and I would completely agree. And obviously, the candidate at that point does have 2 or 3 different choices. One is to begin thinking about round two applications, or at least hopefully they're not just thinking about it, but starting to move forward with round two applications, versus taking a year out from the admissions process and reapplying the following year if they're so focused on the 3 or 4 schools that denied them this year. And, there is a group of candidates that will certainly be more successful in subsequent years with more experience, maybe better test scores or something that's sort of additive to their application. And then the other alternative is just not to pursue business school. If they've gone through the process, not hit the target schools that they really believe are the only ones that will and get them to where they want to be.
Yeah, and I think a lot of your strategy will depend on taking a really hard look at your candidacy, right? So when you get these results from round one and realize that you've, quote, crashed and burned, you have to figure out, why did that happen? And, is it because, wow, I really could use another year of experience, or gosh, I need to buckle down and get a better test score, and those things might translate to waiting to reapply the following year. Whereas if it's, you kind of realize that where you are in your career means you need to go now. And most of your friends, colleagues, et cetera, who've looked at your file from round one have said, gee, you're terrific, but you probably aimed a little high. Then you might say, gosh, okay, round two, I'm going to look at a different group of schools and get back on the field and probably benefit from that round one experience, as we often say on this podcast. So yeah, any other thoughts on this sort of crash and burn scenario for round one, people?
Yeah, you bring up that final point you bring up actually is very important. Most likely your round two applications will by default be stronger than your round one applications just because of the learning curve of sort of preparing these essays and understanding the process and so forth. So it might be the case that in round two, applying to sort of similarly competitive schools might yield better results than your initial results in round one, where perhaps your first essay or your main goals essay wasn't as sharply focused, or whatever it might have needed to be to sort of convince the ADCOMs reading it that you're the right candidate. So there's that learning curve effect which might encourage you to go back in to round two at the same level too.
You already know you're capable of greatness, but wondering just how much you can achieve isn't enough. To truly have an impact on the world, you have to go find out exactly what you're made of. It's what sets the doers apart from the merely curious. With a curriculum designed to prepare you for the global stage, plus access to all Washington, D.C. has to offer, Georgetown's McDonough School of Business is the perfect launchpad for your career. Get started at choosegeorgetown.com/MBA. Yeah, that's a really good point. I think one other thing worth noting is that there's probably, as you alluded earlier, there's probably a good group of round one folks who maybe didn't crash and burn, but are kind of in purgatory because they landed on a couple of wait lists and don't have any outright admits. And I think that's a tough place to be, but that is often a place from which you would also reflect and figure out, do I need to, to look elsewhere in round two in hopes of kind of making sure I at least nail down one outright acceptance, because the wait list is always a gamble. I personally think that the schools are going to be more aggressive than they usually are, which is already pretty aggressive with round one waitlisting, because, you know, we've seen some evidence of lower volume of applications in round one this year. And so I think schools are nervous and might choose to hold on to a larger pool of candidates in case round two application volume is really low. So I think there could be a number of you listening who, you know, you haven't struck out, but you don't really have any decisions yet because you're on the wait list. And I do want to put in a plug for, we have a whole podcast on wait lists and how to navigate the wait list, how to get in off of a wait list. And we recommend giving that a listen too. But in the meantime, you know, I just want to mention that's another possible scenario here.
Absolutely. Just consider if you are on the wait list that you're now a round two candidate for that school. That's kind of the best way to frame that.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. So yeah, tune into that waitlist podcast where you'll hear more discussion on this topic. So we talked about crashing and burning or not really coming up with any acceptances in the first round as a scenario. I want to turn to a happier place, and that is a scenario where you applied in round one and you've exceeded expectations. You kind of got in everywhere. So talk a little bit about what does round two mean for those individuals?
You do a lot of research up front before you apply, and you apply in round one, and it's quite possible that you've been very successful, which is a terrific outcome. The question then begs, did you shoot high enough? And I've always thought that the ideal sort of application strategy will include one or two rejections, because that then tells you as a candidate that you really shot for the moon. And you're going to land where you should be landing in terms of which schools you ultimately attend. But if you're admitted across the board and you didn't apply to the very elite schools, you know, whether that's Harvard, Stanford, Wharton, or whichever for your particular niche and industry, if there's a particular focus, if you didn't apply for the very best, then you might want to reconsider whether you need to ratchet up your game a little bit for round two and take a shot at the moon.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's always interested me there always are candidates in the first round who, they're posting on our site in DecisionWire, they're indicating, I got into, these three schools and maybe they got some scholarship money and, everything went swimmingly. And you look at their profile and you're sort of like, why didn't they apply to, these other schools that are, perhaps higher ranked, more competitive, et cetera, or even better suited for their career goals, as they've stated. It does, you always sort of wonder, I mean, it's a nice trait. You see someone in the applicant pool who's kind of humble, who didn't aim high enough. And I think what's the beauty of being in this situation is that you can throw in an application in round two to a Harvard or a Stanford or whatever school might be on your list that was sort of, you know, deemed out of reach when you first started this process. And just there's a lot less pressure because you've got presumably some admits in your back pocket. And so you're going to be more relaxed. You're going to be able to just produce a great file, go to the interviews. It's sort of, you know, not really a ton of pressure because you're really just looking to maybe trade up. But I do think that as tempting as it might be as a candidate to sort of say, whew, I'm done. I got into the schools I wanted. And, you know, yeah, I could apply to some of those, you know, really top, top schools, but I'd rather just, you know, relax. I would say, you know, just think long and hard before you make that decision, because a couple weeks of hard work on an app could, you know, could be pretty life-changing if you get into that school and end up, you know, attending and, you know, realizing your career goals in a more rapid way.
Right. And I completely agree with that, Graham. I think what we also need to factor in is what are your ambitions and what are your goals? And if the schools which admitted you in round one are truly the best schools for you to execute on those goals and those ambitions. And it might well be that the schools that you did apply in round one will serve you very well for your particular goals, whether it's geography-based or career-based, whatever it might be. That said, if you're targeting the sort of elite careers, you know, whether it's private equity, MBB sort of consulting, you know, top tier management consulting, finance, you know, top tech firms, then the reality is the best school you get into will provide you the best opportunities in the future, the strongest networks and so on and so forth. So it does sort of pay dividends to take a punt in round two versus sitting on what you've got in round one. And you've all that work you put into those essays and applications in round one will yield benefit as you go through the process again in round two. For sure, each school has a different set of essays and data forms and so forth. But you've done a lot of work already in framing out your goals and understanding why you're doing this. The effort it takes for subsequent applications is less, obviously, than those first few that you put in for round one.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I just want our listeners to know that we, you know, Alex and I guess you could argue we have somewhat radical views on rankings. So don't listen to this and hear us saying you've got to go to the best ranked school possible, you know, ignore everything else. I think we, you know, we tend to have a very, we have a strong belief in kind of a tiered system for rankings where, you know, schools are really clustered together in certain groups. And we also think that, you know, depending on your geographical and career goals, that one school may be better for someone and another for a different candidate just based on what you want to do. So taking all that into account, it's still possible that you in round one got in everywhere and didn't aim high enough and should be looking at some additional options. And so I think that's probably enough said on that one. Anything else that you were thinking of on that, or should we move on to our next scenario?
Yeah, no, I think we've covered that quite well. Next scenario works.
So the next scenario is that you're happy. You know, you aimed high enough. You got in to at least, you know, a couple of schools or the one that you really wanted to go to. And so what do people do? What does round two mean for that crowd?
Well, obviously, if you're happy with what you've got and your strategy might well sort of, you know, it doesn't mean to say you're admitted across the board, but you were admitted to what you now feel is your best option going forward, then obviously you don't need to play in round two, which is very good. But it might be that you've got some scholarship money at one or two schools, and maybe the different levels of scholarship money may be swaying your decision making. So it's sort of the idea of sort of selecting the school that you want to attend from your round one choices and making sure that you can afford to do it and so on and so forth, and and seeing that you have the scholarship money that the school is prepared to offer. So as much as schools hate it, some students will in fact go back and negotiate. Some students will negotiate with these schools to try to up their offer in that regard.
Yeah, and that's increasingly common. I think there's an increased amount of transparency around scholarships in general. And I think that because of that, candidates are kind of comparing notes. And so they're able to go back to the school and say, I really want to come. I got X from, another school, and I'd really love for you to match that. And there's some schools that have a kind of, there's some schools that are need-based, and they don't deal with kind of, merit-based scholarships. And so they're kind of out of play. Those would be Harvard and Stanford. But the rest of the crowd, there are some merit-based scholarships. And so it is at the discretion of the committee. It's not just based on, your financial situation. So there is some negotiation that happens. I would say if you applied in round one, got in where you wanted to go and are happy, as Alex said, you don't need to play necessarily in round two. You can use that time. I would actually begin to use that time to think carefully about how to best prepare yourself for business school. I would think about how, a lot of candidates look at pre-MBA, internships. There are a lot of ways to optimize the time you have and, to get, if you're an international candidate, get the visa process out of the way. So there are plenty of things to do if you're sitting out round two because you already made it in. It's actually a great position to be in. The only thing I would say is that, I have seen candidates who they get into some schools in the first round. They're pretty happy, but they notice that, some of these schools were fairly generous with scholarship dollars, and they can't help but wonder if by maybe moving down one notch to a school that was kind of on their radar, but they didn't end up applying to, that they might be able to unlock like a full scholarship at a school. So there are some candidates where, if money is really important and then, the kind of near-term costs of the MBA is weighing on you, I have seen candidates go back into round two despite success in round one just to see if they might be able to unlock basically a free ride to a school that's, again, maybe a notch down from the one that they've accepted. But, if that's important to them, then so be it. I think, many folks in this industry will argue that, you got to think long and hard about that near-term trade-off on scholarship dollars versus the long-term impact of attending, a top school and how that will play in the long run. But there could be scenarios where a round one candidate goes back into round two because they want to try to unlock additional scholarship if they've been, if they don't think they're going to be successful in kind of renegotiating or something with existing schools that accepted them.
Yeah, and sort of to that point of short-term versus long-term gain with scholarship dollars, I think one way to look at it is if you're going to be recruiting for the sort of traditional sort of MBA, post-MBA careers, again, of sort of top-tier management consulting, strategy consulting, finance, tech, I would argue that scholarship money is less important than if you're recruiting for less traditional careers where they, sort of social impact nonprofit or careers where clearly the remuneration is at a lower level, then clearly the impact of scholarship, if you can get a free ride somewhere to then get you into that industry, does become much more compelling.
Yeah, that's a great point. So again, this is sort of the drum that we keep beating on this podcast, but every candidate is an individual and there's a school or set of schools that are best suited to that candidate, as well as there's probably a set of kind of financial scenarios that are best suited when it comes to scholarship dollars or their kind of earning potential and weighing all those factors in. So you have to take your own situation into account and your goals and all the factors. I would say, I think one of the things that can be challenging for really anyone other than those who are absolutely convinced that they're sitting out round two and they're happy with the round one results, but whether you crashed and burned or you exceeded expectations, one of the things that I think is difficult is getting back out there on the field and applying in round two. And I think we hear a lot from candidates who sort of indicate, well, yeah, I could throw together the essays. Yes, I have some great, experience kind of having been through this process, but I'm never going to get my recommenders to do this because, you know, here it is, you know, December, the deadlines are in January. How am I going to convince my boss to spend her Christmas holiday writing a letter of reference? And so do you have any thoughts about that? Because I think, you know, there are people who, it can be kind of embarrassing, right? You've kind of told your friends and family, oh, I'm applying to all the top MBA programs, going to business school next year. Then you get rejected or, you know, maybe waitlisted and just no outright admits in round one. And you got to get back on the horse in round two and ask your boss for a rec letter that they, you know, they thought they were kind of done with that process. So what are your thoughts there, Alex?
You bring up a great point in terms of obviously your application isn't just based on your own effort, but you do need these independent referees' references to support your candidacy. I would say a couple of things. One, it's important to keep your recommenders updated on how the process is going for you anyway, simply because they've already put in effort to support your candidacy. So the right thing to do is to provide them feedback on the results and so on and so forth. And, you know, I would imagine that a number of sort of recommenders, you know, once they're told of your bad news, as it were, are going to be sympathetic to your desire to continue in the process and support you in that. What you're going to run up against is quite a short time frame, and obviously we have a pretty sort of heavy holiday season between now and your round two application. So as if you do get the bad news over the next, you know, course the next few days from round one, I would alert your recommenders as soon as you sort of overcome the sort of the big kick in the gut, and start planning for round two with them. And obviously a lot of the work that they've done in the recommendation process is modifiable, I should say, not directly reusable, but modifiable for different schools' recommendation forms. So, yeah, but the key, I think, Graham, right, is to keep them updated through the process, regardless of your outcomes. If you're admitted, fantastic, let them know, thank them, you know, give them a nice gift or whatever. And if you're not admitted, you probably still should be thanking them and giving them a nice gift, but you want to sort of talk to them about your sort of, you know, the consequences of that decision and potentially applying in round two. And, you know, maybe you have another recommender in your back pocket that you haven't reached out to at this point. That could be another way to go about it. But you do still want, you know, each individual school wants to hear from the one or two most appropriate recommenders for you. So if you're overly chopping and changing, you're obviously not going to be able to do that for some of the schools.
Yeah, and I would just add to that, to the extent that you can make it easy for your recommenders, and this is something we talk about a lot on the podcast too, but, you know, if they are going to submit an additional letter or two in the second round, go onto our website, grab the rec questions, because we post them all on our site. They're not easy to get elsewhere, so just use our site, grab the questions, look at them, and compare them to the questions that your recommenders have already answered in that first round set of applications. And if you can, give them a roadmap, basically say, look, you've already answered these three. You only have to answer this one or two additional questions and you'll have these letters ready to go, more or less. The other thing I would say is, you know, as tempting as it is for the crash and burn crowd to sort of get back on the horse and throw some apps in round two, I would absolutely advise that, you know, these individuals take a long, hard look at their candidacy. I just want to stress that because I feel like sometimes the sting of rejection results in someone kind of just getting angry and feeling like, well, those schools didn't know what they're, you know, don't know what they're missing. It's not me, it's them. And I'm going to throw the same strategy out at a set of, you know, round two programs. And, you know, lo and behold, that doesn't work either, right? So I think you've got to take a long, hard look if you're in that first group, the crash and burn round one crowd. If you're in the second group, the kind of, wow, I did better than I thought I would, and I should really aim higher. The thing I would caution against is sort of retooling your whole strategy because you're like, well, now I'm applying to, you know, schools A, B, and C, and they're really elite and above the ones that I applied to in the first round. And so I have to be a different person for them. And I would say, no, you know, chances are the strategy that you used in the first round, which got you all those acceptances, was probably pretty sound. And so I don't know if you feel differently about this, but I always kind of laugh when people say, well, for my Kellogg application, I'm going to be this person with this set of goals. And then when I work on my Harvard, I've got to be all about, you know, leadership or this or that, or I'm going to be somebody else with a different set of goals, or, you know, this kind of idea that you reinvent yourself on a school by school basis. I've never felt that way. I know there are admissions consultants out there who tell you to do that. I absolutely disagree. And I think that, you know, your best strategy is probably a strategy that you apply across schools. Obviously, there are always nuances, and you want to show the schools that you know who they are and how they fit with what you want to do. But do you have any thoughts on that stuff?
Yeah, I have a couple of quick thoughts. One, I completely agree with you. And right now, I'm just working on a piece from Stanford this morning for some content. And Kirsten Moss is sort of, you know, reflecting on their particular essay, is they just want the truth. They really want to know who you are and what your ambitions are. So trying to sort of fabricate that truth to different schools because you believe different schools are looking for slightly different things is going to do yourself a disservice in the long run anyway. So that's just good advice in general. But certainly veering away from the truth in round two because of success or failure in round one is not going to be helpful. And I also think this all dials into your emotional intelligence. How do you react and respond to news? In this case, bad news if you crashed and burned, and that whole idea that, well, the school's got it wrong, I'm going to stick to my strategy and continue going forward, is just not going to be successful. And that shows a real lack of self-awareness, which schools will pick up on. And whoopity-doo, that's probably why you weren't successful in the first round. So, you know, there are certain, you know, we hope in the admissions process at these top schools does work and does work well. So if you make that assumption that their processes work and they work well, then you should react accordingly in either of those two scenarios.
Yeah, and folks, stay tuned because Alex, I think you heard it here first. Alex is referencing a whole series of content that we've been preparing based on some interviews with Kirsten Moss at Stanford, which will, it's just filled with terrific advice. So stay tuned on the website for some of that content. Alex, I think we've kind of covered, you know, this sort of round one is done, what's next kind of question. And we, you know, again, identified people falling into different categories, the crash and burn crowd, the exceeded expectations crowd, and then the kind of happy crowd, which may, you know, may be super happy or maybe happy, but would have liked more money. So there's some different groups here. A lot of great advice on how to approach round two based on which group you're in. Anything else you wanted to add? Otherwise, we'll kind of sign off and get back to work here.
Yeah, no, I think hopefully we've been able to cover it. This isn't sort of rocket science stuff. We're just trying to sort of, I guess, explain to you that the sort of admissions process is a reasonably straightforward and structured process, so you can approach it in that regard. And I think, you know, oftentimes when you're applying in round one, you had a plan to apply in round two anyway, so you spread your applications over rounds one and round two. But even in that case, you now have the results from round one that can dictate your strategy for round two. In years past, you know, let's say 15 or 20 years ago, round one decisions never were presented before round two deadline. So that created a whole set of unknowns for candidates in the old days. But we're fortunate now that candidates have their results in hand 2 or 3 weeks before the round two deadline, so you can now make appropriate decisions on either ratcheting up, dropping down a little bit, or staying within the same set of schools that you applied in round one, but with the learning curve of going through the process, strengthening those applications a little bit.
Great advice. The last thing that I would mention is that I know a lot of you listen, you know, to the podcasts as we publish them, and we really appreciate everyone tuning in. We've had some real success in our first year doing this, and we're going to keep at it. I will say that it would be incredibly helpful for those of you listening if you could, A, subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts. That helps us in a big way to just continue to produce this podcast. And the other thing I would say is if you can leave a rating or even a review, just let us know what you think. You know, what kind of content would you like to hear more of? Who would you love for us to have as a guest? I know we've had some great guests, Chad Losey from HBS. We've got, you know, had lots of admissions directors come by the podcast and always enjoy that. So yeah, let us know what you think. We really are open to your input and want to make this the best podcast possible. So Alex, thank you so much for taking time today to discuss. We'll be back soon with another episode.
Great, Graham. Thank you very much for having me, and we'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Bye-bye.
Bye.